Hello and welcome to the MJA podcast. I'm your host, Kate Swanell. Have you ever found a letter in your inbox which reads something along the lines of, "Dear esteemed doctor, we are requesting your submission to help complete our special issue being published in just a few weeks. Your expert researchings are exactly what we need. Also, we would like to request your presence on our editorial board." Yes, me too. And I'm not even a doctor. Predatory journals are luring young, naive researchers into paying for publication, and they are the ultimate trap for young players. My guest today is Peter Monk, who is Professor of Radiology, Orthopaedics and Palliative Care at the University of British Columbia. He is also the Editor-in-Chief of the Canadian Association of Radiologists Journal. Welcome, Peter, to the pod. Print is dying. We kind of know that. Are you expecting that most journals, most reputable journals, will be online only before much longer?
Well, I suspect that that's very much the case. I think within 20 years, access to print copies of journals will be very limited.
Yeah.
And that some journals won't offer it at all.
Well, there seems to be a growing shift towards open access as opposed to paid subscription models. What are the advantages of that?
Well, the nice thing about open access is the fact that it is open. In other words, everybody can have access to the information in the journals that normally you would have to pay for by buying a subscription. So by making it open access, it means everybody can read your research or the review articles or whatever it is you would normally publish. And it's such a good concept that actually many granting agencies are stipulating that if you're going to take a grant from them to do your research, the research has to be open access.
Yes.
They won't accept to give you a grant unless you agree to do that. And it sounds like a terrific model. And it sounds like there couldn't possibly be any problems with it, but there are.
Yes. Not the least of which is, how do you pay the people working for the journal?
That's right. I mean, just because something is open access and online doesn't mean that it's free, you know, for everybody. That somebody has to do the copy editing, somebody has to manage the websites. You have to pay for labor, and you have to pay for computer storage and so on and so forth. So it's not free.
No.
It does diminish the cost compared to a printed copy, though.
Given that advertising is dropping as well, particularly for online publications, I guess the next model that people are starting to take up is paying authors paying for publication. That has some downfalls, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does, because the old model was that basically a journal was produced by a publisher, and the readers, the subscribers, paid for it. So now you've switched the whole process around. And instead, with open access journals, basically, it's not the subscriber that pays for it, but the author. And that changes the motivation of the publisher, the people that put out the open access journals. They're not trying to satisfy a reading clientele. They're trying to satisfy a paying authorship. So it means that their priorities all of a sudden are changed.
So how do we make sure that what we're publishing is good quality research and not just paid research?
Well, that's exactly the question. And that's what we're wrestling with at the moment in the publishing world, is how to prevent publishers from being biased.
Yep.
To simply publish anything that people are willing to pay for. So most open access publishers that currently exist are still honest publishers. They still put articles through proper peer review, and they do proper editorial. And the PLOS journals,
yes,
are a very good example of very high quality open access publishing. But some people don't have quite the same ethics and are entirely motivated by money. And this is the category of publisher that we put predatory journals in.
How do we distinguish between them? Is there an easy way to distinguish between them?
Well, sometimes it can be very clear that you're dealing with a predatory publisher, but sometimes it can be a lot more ambiguous.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have probably received emails, sometimes on a daily basis. Predatory journals, very often it's journals you've never heard of. Very often it's journals that are outside your area of expertise, and they claim that they're familiar with your research and they're soliciting manuscripts from you. They typically will promise you very rapid turnaround time, sometimes, 7-10 days, the sort of thing that is normally unheard of in publishing. And they often say that they need something for an issue that's appearing in just a few weeks. Very often also, the subject of the journal is an area that's completely out of your area of expertise. All these are very suspicious signs. For native English readers, often the grammar and syntax seems peculiar. None of these things are hard and fast proof that you're dealing with a predatory journal. But it's one of those things that sort of should get your spidey senses going and make you suspicious.
For sure. Are these journals publishing stuff, or are they just taking the money and running and disappearing?
Well, most of them actually will have a website, and they will, for the most part, put up the articles that are submitted for publication and actually post them on their website. And the important thing to remember is that some of this research is actually very good and would, if people had had the patience to go through with it, been able to appear in conventional high-quality journals. But by and large, most of these predatory journals will create a website, and they will publish these things on the website. Problem is, these journals are not indexed by reputable indices. So this research is not accessible. And of course, most of these journals also do not do proper peer review. The editing is often very poor, so there's a lot of chaff.
I'm chatting today with Professor Peter Monk, Editor-in-Chief of the Canadian Association of Radiologists Journal. Peter has co-authored a perspective on predatory journals, which is published by the MJA. You can find it at mja.com.au. And that's the problem, isn't it? Picking the wheat from the chaff. Is the problem with the traditional quality journals, are we just not quick enough? Are we not doing what our authors want us to do or need us to do?
Well, I think one of the things that ends up happening is that predatory journals are very good at preying on those that are naive or inexperienced. And often these are people that are also under pressure to try to advance their careers by publishing. And they may have tried to go through conventional journals. They find it slow. Or maybe the quality of what they're trying to publish is poor and they don't get it accepted, so they get very frustrated. So when somebody offers them an easy way out, they'll take it.
Yes.
I think most conventional journals are still doing a very credible job. And the turnaround times for most manuscripts in major journals is actually quite good.
Yeah.
But if you have somebody that hasn't had a good mentor or sufficient training in how to publish, then they're going to find themselves falling into the trap of essentially taking a quick fix to try to get something published.
So we could educate our young up-and-coming researchers a little better about what to look out for. But is there any other way of stopping these predatory journals or at least not falling for them?
There's a number of remedies that are being tried. One of the things that people have always asked for and thought would be an easy thing to do is if you could provide a list of good journals or a list of bad journals to avoid, you could just look it up. And that's been attempted. Dr. Beal, who was a librarian at the University of Colorado a few years ago, produced what's called Beal's List.
Yes,
I remember. And he listed all these predatory journals. And it was an invaluable tool.
It was.
There were flaws in it. And there was a lot of lawsuits going on, a lot of threats that were made to him and to his host university.
Yeah.
And it was discontinued over a year ago. There's another company out there called Cabell's, and it provides a similar service, but it's expensive. You have to pay for it. And I think that most people that would really benefit from using these sort of lists probably can't afford to pay for it, and not a lot of academic universities are actually subscribing to their service, at least not yet. So looking for a black list or a white list would be extremely helpful, but it's not readily accessible. The question comes, should there be some sort of international body that is willing to sort of vet these things? And there's all sorts of issues that come up with that, too. Who's going to constitute such a body, and how is it going to be financed without building in some intrinsic bias, depending on what the source of the funding is. So it's still something very much in evolution. What you alluded to a moment ago is educating people about this, telling people about predatory journals and what they do.
Yeah,
it's probably one of the most basic things to do. And it's remarkable how many people, even those that have published previously, are really not familiar with this phenomenon at all. And I think that's why more and more of us in the editorial world are talking about this to our colleagues and trainees. Big target audience for these journals ends up being, people in third world countries, for instance.
Yeah, right.
Or developing countries,
right.
Countries like in Africa or in India. And these are people that really don't have a lot of alternatives necessarily in terms of being able to publish other things. So they're really preying on the people that they're hurting the most.
If you had a magic wand, Peter, what would you do?
Well, if I had a magic wand, it would be nice to find an international body, made up of of, you know, people like the, there's a directory out there called the Directory of Open Access Journal.
Yes.
The, an association of world medical editors, and you put people like this together, and you'd have some sort of independent funding source to actually allow them to put together some sort of vetting agency. They would essentially certify journals, and they'd have to be recertified every few years to make sure that they're still adhering to good quality editorial and reviewing standards. And meanwhile, I think the thing that we should be doing more and more is probably having things like writing workshops for young investigators, teaching them how to edit, how to review, and how to recognize people that don't necessarily do it properly,
yeah,
or do it in an ethical way. It's an imperfect system. There's no question about it. And even reviewers make serious errors. I mean, I certainly see that amongst some of the reviews that I receive as an editor.
Yes.
But very often, reviewers will catch things that myself as an editor would have never seen. Even though it's an imperfect system,
yeah,
I don't think we have anything better at the moment.
No.
I really don't. It's hard to come up with incentives that don't also bias
yeah,
reviewers. If you pay them, all of a sudden, you know, they'll want, some people will just want to do reviews for the sake of being paid and not even care about the quality of it. So no matter what solution you propose, it's not going to be perfect, but it still seems to work reasonably well most of the time.
It does.
Some people have suggested that everything should be published and that the good stuff will float to the top eventually, but it's just not practical for the average consumer of medical knowledge. I mean, they're often not academics. They're practicing physicians, for instance.
Yes.
And they just want to get some useful information to help them deal with their patient load. So we're in a bit of a bind.
Thank you, Peter, for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's been an experience. Nice to do things that are different once in a while. Thank you.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.